FM. This is Radio Autonomía, Autonomy Radio, Zapatismo in the Bay. And we're here today with Aram Mendoza from Classroom Struggle Collective. And we're going to do an interview and talk about the work of Classroom Struggle. So can you please tell us a little bit about what Classroom Struggle is and the work you do? Mm-hmm. Just to start us off.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us on to talk about some of the work we do. We've been a group for the past about a year and a half. We formed in the at the end of 2011 out of Occupy. We were the originally the K-12 Education Committee of Occupy Oakland. And what we've been doing since then is we've been continuing to work with parents, teachers, school workers of all types, after school workers, and students, organizing against things like school closures that happened a couple years ago, cuts to adult education, attacks on teachers' working conditions, creating curriculum that's relevant to local struggles, like what happened in Mi Pueblo last year, and basically just trying to support any initiatives that we're aware of around where students, teachers, and school workers and parents are organizing against the district and against things that make education and schooling an oppressive rather than a liberatory experience.
Awesome. And there are many ways that you've spoken to that you try to communicate with folks. One of them is the curriculum, and maybe we can delve a little bit more into that. But another principal mode of communicating with students, families, and other teachers and educators, mm-hmm. Is the Classroom Struggle newsletter. So is it possible for you to just share a little bit more about the work of that the newsletter does, its significance in your organizing efforts at school and inside and outside of school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so over the past year and a half, we've put out 5 newsletters. And they've been newsletters that have featured voices of school workers, parents, students, like I mentioned, and they've been just writing about the conditions that they face in schools. We've had articles about all the struggles that we've participated in. There's an occupation of a school called Lakeview that was being closed. So a lot of voices from that that were in the newsletter, as well as updates on what the OUSD, the Oakland Unified School District, is putting forward in terms of policies that affect the whole education community in Oakland. And the newsletter has been longer in the past year, where they've been like, you know, maybe up to 20 pages or so of analysis. And this year we're going to change it up a little bit and try to put out more frequent newsletters and put them out that are shorter. And so, but we still want to feature the voices of people who work, live, and relate to Oakland schools. And so it's a way for us to be in dialogue with folks and to help spread people's voices and spread information about what's happening in schools. Because a lot of times, whether we're students or especially for those of us who work in schools, we stay kind of like stuck in our own classroom or stuck in our own school, and there's not the same type of sort of conversation happening across school sites that we'd like to have around the critical issues that we're facing as workers and as students.
So the newsletter goes out to different schools throughout the district, the Oakland School District?
We've put them out. We do as much mailbox stuff as we can, but we try to meet people at the school board meetings, at education-related events. We put on workshops at Teachers for Social Justice and conferences like that, and just try to spread it to anyone we come in contact with that relates to schools in some way.
Awesome. I also noticed on your website, that there was ask for translators to translate to Spanish mm-hmm. and other languages. Can you speak about?
Yeah. I mean, we're all, especially now that we're making shorter bulletins and shorter newsletters, we want to put it out so that it's accessible to everybody. And a lot of parents speak Arabic or Spanish, and so there's a need to translate. So if there's any translation skilled folks out there, we'd love to get some support with that. I'll share the email at the end.
Awesome. So yeah, as I was looking through the Classroom Struggle website, and we'll have that link as well on our website, you describe yourselves as supporters of public education. And so a question that I have here is that why do you choose to support or put energy into struggling in the public education system versus creating alternative schooling systems? In other words, can you speak to the dilemma of making public schools useful to the students and communities where they're located in versus another following a model of charter schools or private schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And in a place like Oakland, where there is a lot of charter schools and a lot of charter schools that are doing very interesting things in terms of radical curriculum and sort of just critical educational practices, I think that's one of the key questions we've grappled with a lot and thought about and written about. A lot of students go to public schools, you know, the majority of students at this point, and there's a lot of need to be organizing there. We think that, you know, public schools are institutions that are at best accessible, open, and can be stabilizing for a community. And that's why we want to defend and transform public education. And so there is that defense piece that speaks to the need to fight against budget cuts and restructuring that destabilizes schools and layoffs of a lot of older teachers who are veteran teachers, a lot of them teachers of color, who and are more expensive than younger teachers like myself, maybe, who have only been teaching for a few years. So we want to defend public schools because they're institutions where people are at and can, like I said, at best get some type of development around literacy. But at the same time, we're aware, like probably a lot of the listeners, that public schools can also carry out a lot of oppressive practices, and you know, through whether it's through the tracking system where you reproduce racial and class-based divisions among youth, or Eurocentric patriarchal curriculum, or if it's the connection to the mass incarceration system that exists in the society, we recognize that all these things are happening in schools all the time. So those of us who are school workers, we work to hold ourselves accountable to have practices that aren't oppressive to students, and we support each other in doing that, because the district, the Oakland Unified School District, and a lot of districts across the country, but especially this one, have a rhetoric around social justice and wanting to put students first and this kind of thing, which we obviously want to put students first because they're vulnerable and they're people who are developing and need to be supported in that development. But at the same time, the way in which the district pushes this agenda is by doing test-based accountability, pushing more sort of rigid evaluations on teachers that aren't totally based on actually developing teaching practices or student learning. And they're doing this all the while they're cutting budgets and closing schools and laying off counselors and PE teachers and all types of school workers. So that we're supportive of anyone who's trying to do some type of educational project that's against oppression, that's facilitating the development of young people, even if it's in a charter school. But we see the charter movement as a whole as being an attack on working class and people of color communities. And so we don't have a sort of mechanical anti-charter thing, but at the same time, we recognize that the broader process is one of this trying to further divide students and track students and discipline students in ways that, again, play into that mass incarceration system that exists here. Mm.
In late May of this year, Classroom Struggle was part of organizing a major and, might I say, very successful demonstration that then was also a general assembly at the Oakland School Board meeting. Hundreds of teachers, hundreds of families, and other community members were all present and pressuring the school board to support adult education and fair contracts for teachers. Can you speak to a little bit to the organizing efforts that made this possible, and also what's the significance of this demonstration for the families, for teachers, and generally for the public education system? And finally, how do you see the board and school administrators kind of reading these kinds of actions or responding to them?
So just one thing for context, about 3 or 4 years ago, I believe it was in the 2010-2011 school year, the Oakland Unified School District decided to cut almost the entire budget to adult education. So it went from $14 million to $1 million in a budget, more or less. The adult education program in Oakland used to have its own buildings. It also provides classes in elementary, middle, and high schools to parents who can drop their kids off at school and then go take a class. It could be classes related to computer literacy, or there's a lot of English as a second language classes that parents can take for free at the same institutions in their community that they're already sending their children to. So not only did it facilitate the development of parent skills around language and technological literacy, but also created more parent involvement in the schools and more parent presence, which we see as a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was cut by $13 million back about 4 years ago. Now, this past school year, 2012-2013, we saw another cut where they wanted to just totally decimate the program. They wanted to cut the $1 million, the small amount of money that they gave to providing support for parents in their schools. And I think it's important for us to remember that this is all in the context of the former superintendent, Tony Smith, putting out a lot of ideas in the media and in their policies around full service community schools. So these are full service community schools was part of Tony Smith's and the school board's strategic plan to provide more wraparound services for students. So they want to open up health clinics while they're also closing classes that parents take advantage of to learn a new language or learn different skills in their community. And so we see it as very contradictory. So what we did was we got in touch with various parents and teachers, adult ed teachers, at the various schools where the classes were still being given, schools like Korematsu, CCPA, La Escuelita, and we met them at the school board, and they were very excited about getting some support in developing their campaign to keep their classes. And so we worked with them over the spring to really just build their campaign. It was really inspiring because you had parents autonomously deciding to use their class time to go pick up other parents at other schools and have general assembly meetings of parents with their teachers there. And it was really interesting. So it was inspiring because they were doing this, they were self-organizing themselves, and they also did a similar thing where they got organized together and mobbed on the school board's office and issued a demand delivery saying, if you don't meet with us on our own time, which is during the school day, during our classes, then you're not really serious about hearing our voices, because the school board meetings are often from 6 to 8 on Wednesdays every 2 weeks. So it's a really inaccessible time for parents who have a lot of obligations in terms of work and family responsibilities. And so that was an inspiring and militant demand delivery that they did, which resulted in a meeting of about 120 parents and 3 of the school board members about a week later. And so this was the first step in the campaign. And I think what it showed was that the parents were able to organize themselves autonomously and really push the district to bend to their will, as opposed to doing what the district usually wants, which is to just co-opt people and bring them into their really dull and long meetings that nobody can stay the entire time for, and where they make decisions at the very end of the night, the most important controversial decisions at the end, once they've just had won their war of attrition and gotten everyone to leave. So eventually, on May 22nd, these parents who we were working with started building for an intervention at the school board. So they brought, like you said, hundreds of parents. The Oakland Education Association, which is the teacher union, also brought out a lot of people because the contract was under negotiations. Mm-hmm. And it was inspiring because you saw teachers and parents and high school students and elementary school students holding up the same banner, the same message, the same demand to defend adult education, not cut the program. And these are groups of people who are typically divided against each other at times, you know, and that's what the state and the politicians want to do, is continue to divide people so that there's not an active resistance against their policies. And so eventually the vote was had at that meeting to not cut the program. And that was due to a few different factors, one of which is the changes in the budget through the local control funding formula, LCFF. But I think the mobilization of the parents played a huge role in putting the pressure on the district to do the right thing. But I think the last thing I'll say about the district is that there's a lot of people on the Oakland Unified School Board that put themselves out there as if they're for racial justice and for equity. And there's a lot of rhetoric around that. And I'm sure a lot of those intentions may be true for some of them. But at the same time, they're the executors of these cuts. They're attacking communities of color, working class communities, parents specifically in this case. And so we want to really understand that these politicians are never going to do what's in our interests, and that we have to really organize ourselves from the ground up to get anything that we need. And so this was a small victory because they got to keep the program, but it's in the context of a larger attack where they cut the majority a few years ago. So right now we're continuing to work with some of these parents to figure out what the next step is, if they want to try to rebuild the program or what type of demands they want to be fighting around this school year.
Mm. Yeah, that was definitely a very powerful demonstration. I spoke to some of the mothers involved in the organizing efforts, and they said that one of the reasons that they were there was not for themselves, but for their children, given mm-hmm. that they were taking language literacy classes and to be able to help their children do homework, they needed these, you know, resources and services. And so that's really important for them. Another thing that you all have partaked in or were involved with this summer, some of you traveled to Mexico and met with other teachers organizing in their schools and communities. If you can describe a little bit of some of the grassroots work that you witnessed happening in Mexico around education, and also if you saw any resemblances around the struggles happening down south with the organizing efforts happening in Oakland, if you can speak to that, and I'd like to ask you another question in relation to that after.
Cool, yeah. We went to Mexico City, DF, as well as Michoacán and Oaxaca, and met with various teachers from a group called La Cente, which is a dissident teacher union. That's La Coordinadora de Trabajadores de Educación. And so this is a group that has a strong membership base mostly in the south of Mexico, but throughout the country they have locals. And but Chiapas, Michoacán, Guerrero, and Oaxaca are their strongest centers. And so we spent a lot of time learning about what they were doing. And the two main things that they've been working on mm-hmm. that we learned about was a big struggle against the education reform that the new president Peña Nieto is pushing in Mexico right now. And that reform is, you know, part of a whole package of structural reforms that are under the banner of the Pacto por México that the PRD, the PRI, and the PAN, the main ruling parties in Mexico, have united around. And so the education reform, a big part of it is pushing test-based evaluation for teachers. So similar to how there's a standardized testing of students, they want to do the same thing to teachers and basically break the some of the gains that the union has made over the years. So that's one aspect, is really organizing militantly against that education reform. The other piece that we learned a lot about, especially in Michoacán, was transformative educational projects that La Cente is working on. And so in Oaxaca, they have a thing called the PTO, which is the Plan for the Transformation of Education in Oaxaca, which puts forward different frameworks around how to develop liberatory schooling in the context of public education. And so it talks not only about the curriculum and how it should be situated in the local context of each school's community, but also ways in which the teachers facilitate the building of parent committees at the school in order for there to be a strong sort of parent, school worker, teacher, and student organizing body at each school. Mm-hmm. And so as well as having regular conferences where they discuss pedagogical practices, and those are two of the big umbrellas that we saw was the resistance to the education reform as well as the alternative ed projects.
And I guess outside of that, what other in relation to teacher struggle in the global south and in Mexico, mm-hmm. What other things that did you all learn or witness that you think that can help us think through strategies or struggles around education here, given the context of Oakland, of an urban environment, given that many of the schools that are most affected by certain reform projects are in communities of color and working mm-hmm. class communities.
I mean, one thing that's interesting is that in Michoacán, for instance, one of their alternative and transformative educational projects is called the Escuelas Integrales, which is like, I guess, holistic schools, where all the curriculum that teachers work on is based on the actual needs of the community. So, for instance, science projects are organized around how to get and distribute water to places that don't have it and things of that nature. So it's very rooted in the local needs of each community. But these are also schools that La Cente, which is, again, is the dissident teachers union, has fought for to get public money for. Mm. And so what's been interesting about talking to teachers in Mexico about that is that up here a lot of times progressive and radical folks want to start charter schools in order to have autonomy from a district that is constantly destabilizing schools. And so it makes sense that people wouldn't want to have anything to do with that. at the same time, it also further here in the U.S. it further divides the sort of basis for engaging in struggle as a whole school community across a district like Oakland, because if you have each school getting their own funding from decentralized places, mm-hmm. it creates lack of a central target for people to be organizing around. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other problems with that. But that's basically the same thing they're facing in Mexico also, is mm-hmm. that they, over the past decades, what they've done is they've decentralized the negotiations between the state and the unions, and the state and the parents who want to have policies that support their students. And they've put it, instead of having like a federal negotiation with all the parties and the parents, school workers, and students, they have it by the state level. And they want to even regionalize it and decentralize it more than that, mm-hmm. for the same reason that it's been done here, is to make it harder to struggle mm-hmm. As a school community. So that's part of the lesson, I think, is how do we make it, how do we take the transformative products that we have as teachers here in the U.S. and fight for them to be public, and fight them for them to be part of what regular public schools are doing in their practices. I think that's one of the big lessons I took from what the teachers are doing down there.
Awesome. And you spoke a little bit about Mi Pueblo and organizing around that, which is not necessarily like obviously connected, for example, to public education. Can you speak to a little bit about that struggle and the organizing efforts around that?
Yeah. So, you know, for those of us who are teachers, we do go to the OEA, which is the teachers union meetings, and we participate actively in the union. But one of our main focuses based on our politics is that we want teachers as workers who sometimes get paid more than other workers, especially other parents who send their students to work with us. We want to show solidarity with all groups of workers. And so, for instance, some of my students had parents who worked at Mi Pueblo and who were undocumented and were facing being laid off because Mi Pueblo was cooperating with the state in terms of its doing the I-9 audits. Mm-hmm. And so what we encouraged the union to take political stands on and to give material support to was workers who are in struggle, such as those in Mi Pueblo, because we think that any destabilization in the community is going to affect us within our classrooms, and vice versa. What we do in our classrooms needs to be able to have a positive impact on what's happening in the community. So we worked hard to get groups of teachers to go out to some of the actions that were being organized by the Dignidad y Resistencia committee around Mi Pueblo. And we supported it also by making some pretty academically rigorous curriculum around Mi Pueblo that we spread out across the district and put on our blog, so nationally too. To help teachers be able to teach about it in a way that was, you know, it's a document-based question, so it's looking at multiple perspectives on what happened in the Mi Pueblo case, so it is a rigorous thing, but it also has a critical content, mm-hmm. and so that was part of what we did around that.
That's really cool. That's awesome. So if folks are interested in learning more or would like to get connected, how could they plug into the organizing efforts supporting this? We're finding out more information.
Our first and foremost, our blog is classroomstruggle.org. We just had an event last week in solidarity with the teachers in Mexico, and we had a Skype with a teacher from Michoacan who was talking, giving us updates about what's happening down there. So we'll have events coming up that we'll post on the blog. Our email is classroomstruggle@gmail.com, and we'd really love to talk to people who are interested in doing student organizing, parent organizing, school worker organizing. We've been in touch with some students right now who are trying to organize against the fare hike that AC Transit is imposing on them, where they're raising their youth passes from $20 to $23, and they've been producing their own literature with really cool graphics and images and distributing out to high school students. So we would love to talk to people who want to work on that type of campaign.
Awesome. Great. Well, we'll have those links and other things that you've mentioned in the interview up on our site, and a link to your site as well.
Great.
Thank you again.
Thank you all very much.